was capable of doing those things, and he loved these people, and I'm sure he was happy to help them work out their difficulties, but there was still something missing.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
I'm going to do something today that I almost never do. I am going to mostly repeat an old sermon. I have reworked this a little bit, but when I went back and was looking at my notes from my previous studies of Acts chapter 16, I thought to myself, I don't really have a lot new to add, so this will be substantially the same as when I preached it some years ago. This is the first time here in the 16 chapters so far, 17 sermons so far in the book of Acts that I have chose to repeat anything from years past. And I will warn you that when I preached this sermon a few years ago, the introduction that I gave, which I'm reusing on this occasion, made some of you think that I was preparing to announce that I was leaving Indian Run Christian Church. Some of you were horrified. Some of you had your hopes up. He might finally... I was not preparing to leave then. I am not preparing to leave now. So whether that calms you down or busts your bubble, there it is. But that said, 31 years ago, the time came for me to quit being a youth minister. And I want to make it clear, it was not that I didn't like kids. I like kids, mostly. And get along with them, okay. And I loved the kids that at that point I had been laboring with for 6 years. And I liked Shady Valley, Tennessee. It was as beautiful a place as I have ever been. And we have good friends there and still enjoy going back from time to time. None of that was the problem. The problem was my calling. I knew I had been called as a pulpit minister to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ in that capacity. I was working as a youth minister because things were done differently back in those days. The whole concept of career youth ministry was only just beginning to take hold in some of the bigger churches at that time. I was still operating on the model that had been in practice since the late 60s, early 70s, which was that youth ministries was where young future preachers paid their dues. You worked on your degree, and while you worked on your degree, you served as a youth minister somewhere. The model had its strengths. Tiny churches that could otherwise never have afforded a second minister could get a starving seminarian to fill the post, particularly if their senior minister had reached retirement kind of years and had built his own house and they had a parsonage available and the youth minister had a wife who worked. It kind of fit our situation to the T, and we were in that. It was a common arrangement. It had this advantage. It put young ministers who were yet untried under the supervision of an older man who had been in the harness for some years. Now, in the spirit of complete honesty and full disclosure, I need you to understand that the youth minister wasn't all that keen on that arrangement at the time. The youth minister at the time thought that he had all the answers, and if this old guy would only get out of his way and turn him loose, he would get things turned around in this church right now. It was only in later years, after the youth minister had been in the harness for a while himself, that he was really able to look back and fully appreciate the wisdom of the arrangement. I'm going to tell you, it was a great thing, and I'm glad that I was able to do it. On one of my return trips to Shady Valley to go to the nursing home where my old senior minister, Hatley Mabry, resided at that time, and to spend an afternoon with him just about a month before he went home to be with the Lord. That was a good occasion. At any rate, the point is, I was not a career youth minister. I was a prospective preaching minister paying his dues, and when they were paid and my degree completed, I had to decide, where do I go to become a pulpit minister? The whole world was open, I suppose. There were churches everywhere looking for ministers. I will not bore you with the details. God made it plain to me I should go to Indianapolis. That was where my calling led me. There was a little neighborhood church there on the west side of town that needed what God had put in my heart to do. And I needed some things there, too. I'm going to tell you, the 10 years that I spent at that time were not easy years. And when the time came to go, it didn't make that time to come somehow invalid. They needed things that I was able to do. I needed lessons they were able to teach. And when it was time for me to leave, God still had a calling. He had prepared this place for me to come. And I want to tell you now also, in the spirit of complete honesty and full disclosure, the ministry at Indian Run has been one of the greatest blessings of my life. And I know this is where God had in mind for me to be. Now, back to the book of Acts. Paul has been called to preach the gospel. Woe is me, Paul says on another occasion, if I do not preach the gospel. And he has preached the gospel. As of last chapter, we had just concluded the course of Paul's first missionary journey. On that journey, you can follow the red line. He had left Antioch, and he had gone to preach the gospel on the island of Cyprus, and then shot up to Perga, and then Pisidian Antioch, and then headed east to Lystra and Derbe, and then back to Pisidian Antioch, and went down and made one last stop in Attalia before sailing home to his home base and his point of departure in just plain old Antioch. There's the end of the first missionary journey, even though you see another line going south to Jerusalem. I will come to that in a moment. That is not usually reckoned to be part of the missionary journey. For those who keep track of such things, this occupied Paul for about 2 years, A.D. 46 to 48, or pretty near that. And then he went to Jerusalem, and we saw why last week, because people had followed in his wake everywhere he had been, these people who became known as Judaizers, who told all these folks that Paul had just led to believe in Jesus Christ, okay, great, you believe in Christ, but now you got to be circumcised. You got to give up pork and a lot of other things in your diet. You got to celebrate the Jewish things. You got to not work on the Sabbath. You got to wash your hands all the time. All these things. And there was a great furor about it. And Paul has gone down to Jerusalem to meet with the apostles and get an official ruling on this question. And as it turns out, as we saw, the answer is no. All these new Gentile Christians do not have to keep the Jewish law. Good news for Paul and the new converts. And the second missionary journey begins. It begins with Paul retracing some of those northern sites that he had gone to on the first missionary journey and telling them this good news. No, the word from the apostles in Jerusalem is you do not have to become Jews in order to be Christians. And that was good news. And I'm sure that Paul was happy to be passing it along. But apparently, there was something missing for him. And I'm going to add that it surely is the case that these congregations, which he had just over the last couple of years helped bring into existence, still needed help. There were leadership issues to be worked out, doctrinal issues to be worked out, teaching and structural things to be done. And Paul was capable of doing those things, and he loved these people, and I'm sure he was happy to help them work out their difficulties, but there was still something missing. Paul's real heart was to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ to people who had not heard it yet. And as much as he loved these people, they had heard the gospel of Jesus Christ. He knew he preached it to them. And while things remained to do, these people had the gospel to answer the calling that God had laid on his heart. He needed to go somewhere where the gospel had not yet been heard and preach it there. There was a lot of territory that he could choose from. Asia Minor was just next door in one direction. The whole region of Galatia was just next door in another direction. He could go to any of the places, lots of cities in those regions where people had not yet heard the gospel. So he made a big loop that kind of bordered the territories of both of those regions, and he passed up this city and that city and the other city where the gospel of Jesus Christ had not yet been preached, but in some manner that is not completely designated to us, the Holy Spirit kept talking to him, saying, not this one. Not this one either. No, not this one. He just kept going and not finding a place where God would allow him to light. He had picked up a new helper by the name of Timothy. We'll hear more about Timothy in days to come. But I think Timothy's first introduction to the missionary work must have been a little puzzling. Wandering around for just about 300 miles, passing up perfectly good places with absolute need for the gospel, but not preaching to them because the Spirit kept saying to Paul, not. As it turns out, it was not only the case that God did not have the region of Asia Minor in mind for Paul. God did not have anywhere on the entire continent of Asia in mind for Paul. And Asia is a big continent with a lot of people in it. Paul ends up at Troas, and you can see on the map there that that's as far as he could go without either leaving Asia or turning around. Troas is on the beach staring across the Aegean Sea at Europe. How many of you remember when you were kids playing that game? There are different ways to play it, but sometimes you blindfold someone and there is an item in the room that they can't see because they're blindfolded, except that kids always cheat at this kind of thing. But you blindfold them, and the way you help them is you say, getting warmer, warm, wait, cold, cold, frigid, in the freezer, warmer, hot, blistering, right? Everybody played that game. Or maybe you played a simpler version. Marco! Yeah, everybody knows. Everybody knows. Sometimes God is required to guide us in such ways because we are blind and slow and dense and given to thinking small. At Troas, God gives Paul a vision of a man from Macedonia, the first region across the water, pleading for Paul to come over and help them. Not Asia at all. Europe. Europe is where God desires Paul to go. I want to assure you, it is not that God has forgotten Asia. He just has other people for that job. God has people for Africa too, although Paul will never go there. So far as we know, Egypt and Ethiopia will become Christian countries. Someone will evangelize them. God had that someone in place already. Egypt and Ethiopia would fall as Christian countries too, which is something we should take note of. But the evangelists were already assigned for those places. And as to Asia Minor, not so many years after this writing of the 16th chapter of the book of Acts, the Apostle John will reside in Ephesus, the chief city of Asia Minor, and he will write important letters to all the other principal churches in the region. God had that covered. He had a man on that job. But Paul, God had set aside early as the apostle to the Gentiles, and the center of Gentile civilization lies across the water where Paul stopped at Troas in puzzlement about where to go. It would not be easy. The second convert in Europe was a jailer. Somebody take a guess how Paul became acquainted with a jailer. He would have lots of experience that would give him an opportunity to remember this lesson. Later in Rome, he would say, well, you can always preach to the guards. Because there was a lot of jail in Paul's future. It is my contention that it took chains and bars to keep him in Europe, because he always wanted to run back to Asia. I have just a few conclusions to draw about all this. Let me begin with a question. How many of us are of European ancestry? And some of you who didn't raise your hand probably should have. I think Costello, that's an Italian name, right? Yeah. And Bailey, that's a Scottish name. And Oberly, German? German name. And Wellendorf, you tell me. German, okay. Dorf. Yeah, Dorf. I guess, yeah, yeah. I might have figured that out. Hi, Gino?
Rico.
Yep, Rico, I'm sorry. Rico. Rico. Give me. Okay, and that is?
Italian
also. Felsons are from Ireland? Poland. Felsons are from Poland. Carols are from Ireland. I'm sorry. All right. Here's my point. All of us with European ancestry have reason to be thankful that Paul answered the call and went across the water and preached the gospel to our people. That guy that God gave Paul the vision of, he might as well have been named Bailey, because it was through Paul's preaching that my ancestors received the gospel of Jesus Christ. Second, we have something of a confusion about missionary work in modern times. And the confusion is the result of a thing that has technically been called the social gospel. And the essence of the social gospel is that the main purpose of the church is to feed the hungry, clothe the naked, tend to the sick, and take care of things like that. Now, I've read the 25th chapter of the gospel according to Matthew, and I am quite familiar. Yeah, they're having a good time, I can tell. I am quite familiar with the concept of our obligation to the least of these, and how it says that when we minister to the least of these, we actually minister to Jesus Christ. I get all that. We need to feed the hungry. If we are not feeding the hungry as Christians, we are experiencing a problem. And I don't ignore that. Who can tell me, because we need to keep this number before us, what is the goal for the produce in the community harvest garden this year? Yeah, 12 and a half tons, 25,000 pounds of food that we hope to raise to feed the hungry. Tomorrow I will pick a few tomatoes about this big and a couple of peppers. It'll be a start. It's going to get there. We want to feed the hungry. And work in the foreign mission field, just like church work at home, has to address the needs of the hungry and the hurting. Christians should do that wherever they go and in whatever capacity. But I'm going to tell you something. Paul did not cross the water to take bread to Europe. Or if he did, it was the bread of life he took them. He crossed the Aegean Sea to tell them about Jesus Christ. And I want to make something else plain about this whole endeavor. In crossing to Europe, Paul did not leave a more prosperous place to go to a less prosperous place. He did not leave a more powerful region to go to a less powerful region. He did not leave a more developed region to go to an underdeveloped region. The closer Paul got to Rome, the closer he was to the financial, political, industrial, and military center of all things in his world. The people God called Paul to had more money than the people God called Paul from. People God called Paul to had more power than the people God called Paul from. The people God called Paul to had more opportunity than the people God called Paul from. They had more of everything except one thing. What they did not have in Europe, and especially in Rome, was the gospel of Jesus Christ. That was what they needed. Last week I told you I thought there were two great mistakes made in the missionary movement of the 19th and 20th centuries. The first I'd mentioned at that time, the tendency to think that all Christianity should be American Christianity. I will now mention the second, the notion that the missionary movement was primarily a benevolence and relief operation. It is not. and it cannot become that. The primary purpose of missionary activity must never be to transfer wealth from one location to another, but we tended to make it that. We have always smiled on missionary endeavors to poor and underdeveloped countries because they are poor and underdeveloped. And we think that we can help them with that. And we didn't send many missionaries, hardly any, to wealthy and developed countries because it seemed to us that they were doing just fine. And they didn't need any help from us. They have bread already. But do they have the bread of life? Somehow we didn't ask that question, and our thinking seemed to imply that people need bread worse than they need Jesus Christ. God forbid that such a notion should ever get lodged in our heads. Can we possibly imagine that eternal separation from God will be not as bad for this people over here because they had a little more stuff for the few years their earthly lives? Oh, wait, I know. Let's give them more stuff and enable them to build bigger barns to hold their more stuff. Oh, thou fool. This night thy soul is required of thee, and then whose shall all these things be? I don't want to make the opposite mistake and think that we should only send missionaries to wealthy countries either. The Great Commission is clear. The target is the whole world. Go into the whole world and preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. The whole world includes wealthy countries and poor countries, big countries and little, developed and undeveloped. Where shall we send a missionary? To that place where they do not know the saving grace of God in Christ Jesus. For years and years, we sent missionaries to India based on the social gospel, give them bread. And we found out a couple of things. First, Jesus was absolutely right when he said, "The poor you will have with you always." You should feed the beggar at the gate. You should do that because God loves and values that person, but you should not delude yourself that you will solve the problem of world poverty by handing out bread. You will not. India is, as a matter of fact, doing progressively better financially these days. There is more opportunity, more upward mobility, and more of the problems that come with those things than there has been in the past in India. If I myself were to go into foreign missions these days, and God has not called me in that direction, but if I were, I think I would go to India, not because of their great need for bread, which still exists but is lessening, but because of their great need for Jesus Christ, and because of my strategic sense that India is poised to be the next great power for the gospel in this world. Which brings me to my third thing. God called Paul to Europe in general and to Rome in specific because Rome was the power poised to launch the gospel everywhere. Our mission efforts need something of that kind of strategic thinking. And again, I'm not for letting the hungry starve, but I am for putting first things first. What good bread without the bread of life? Let me ask you an interesting question in terms of strategic thinking. Who believes, who is not in the 8 o'clock service, believes that they can name for me the wealthiest, most powerful, and influential city in the United States? I will give you this much of a hint. It is unarguable. It's not even close. Second place is nowhere near first. The wealthiest, most powerful, influential city in the United States. No, not Las Vegas. However, we're working on it, aren't we? Yeah, that's not New York. Washington, D.C. I don't know who said that, but you are absolutely correct. Washington, D.C. is the wealthiest, most prosperous, powerful, influential city in the United States of America. How about missionaries to Washington, D.C.? What a concept. Fourth and finally, we will have to do it all again and again. I believe that the church in every generation should be about the Great Commission, and every generation should strive to reach the whole world. And every generation of Christians should do that, knowing that another generation of Christians is going to have to do it again. Parts here, parts there. God called Paul to Europe, and Europe not only became Christian, Europe became Christendom. That is a big, wide, far-reaching Christian civilization, a millennia of Christian civilization. And did Christian Europe, Christendom, do something about the problems of the hungry and the sick and the ignorant? Let me tell you that hospitals, orphanages, universities, and soup kitchens are all inventions of Christendom. Yes, it did. Western Christian civilization did some bad things too, but I contend that the influence was overwhelmingly good for the world. And then came Voltaire and Nietzsche, Marx and Freud and others, declaring that God was dead, the Bible obsolete, and laying out another path to human happiness and fulfillment. And Christian Europe continues to become, although there are signs that we are now changing direction, but has continued to become more secular. And I simply ask you, as observers of the world, I just want you to look at Europe today and ask yourself whether or not something was lost in the process. It is perhaps time to send missionaries to Europe, from whence the gospel came to us. Whatever we think of the strategic approach, and I think we need to be more about it, this one principle remains unalterable in light of the Great Commission. Identify those places where Jesus Christ is not and take him there. Identify the places where they have not heard the gospel and preach it there. And it starts a lot closer to home than the foreign mission field. If your neighbor down the street does not know Jesus Christ, introduce him there. If that person you work with does not know Jesus Christ, introduce him there. If those folks you go to school with do not know Jesus Christ, introduce them to him there. And it can start even closer to home than that. You've got to look into your own heart and ask yourself and answer honestly, Have I surrendered to Jesus Christ? Because many people who have gone by the name Christian for years have never honestly answered that question. And some of us who might be able to say, by and large, I have surrendered to Jesus Christ, are still going to have to say, well, I've surrendered to him here and here and there, but there's this one place, this one area of my life, which I have kind of held out on. I'm a little slow to put that under his control. I kind of reserve that unto myself. Be honest. And if there are such places, invite Jesus Christ into them. Let strongholds fall. Christ stands at the door and knocks. Will you answer?
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.